from the Silver and Black Report. I love that site. I love where we are in media, where you can get your quote-unquote non-traditional, your non-traditional media sources that I think many, many times do much better than the quote-unquote big boys. And the guy there is Chris McClain, nice enough to wake up and join us here on KHDK. Chris, it's Dave and Katie. Thank you. How are you doing?
Good, guys. How about yourselves?
We're excited for Raider football. KHDK, the home of the Raiders out here in Sacramento and in the Valley in general. And we've been going through talking about, you know, pads starting last weekend, trying to get around different injuries. And the one thing I've been really focused on is this middle linebacker position battle, where you got two guys going at it right now, one with an edge, but neither, you know, have played that position in the NFL. How big of a concern is that based on the way the defense has played out for the Raiders? How big of a concern is that going into this year?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You got all this experience at linebacker between Reggie and Jack and the coach and general manager, but then you got the two guys battling out for the starting position with no experience.
Yep.
You know, we saw Adam start out there, and Corey James got some looks out there too, but it looks like Markell Lee's really starting to take it over, which isn't that big of a surprise to me. I liked him when they drafted him in the fifth round out of Wake Forest, but, you know, coming out of a small school, it's difficult to scout those guys and see how they're going to project in the NFL, but he's really looked good this camp. He's looked good. He's been able to show he can cover, you know, the tight ends when he needs to, and then he's been able to stuff the run. And, you know, we've got to see that first little bit of that when they had pads on finally earlier this week. So it's definitely a concern. I know a lot of fans wanted them to attack that position in the draft, but they felt comfortable adjusting it later in the draft, and they did with Markell Lee. So He's got the edge right now to take that starting position. So we'll see how it continues. You know, camp's a long time. So,
Chris, one of the major stories is always going to be injuries with football. And so far early on, you've had Bruce Irvin missing time, Mario Edwards, Amari Cooper, even Gary Conley, who, you know, has been out because of the legal stuff, which has now been cleared. He's been suffering from shin splints. How much of that is taking a toll on camp, and do you have any updates on when guys are going to be available to start practicing?
Yeah, Amari is the question. Jack has never really told us much about injuries the whole time he's been there. He left midway through practice on Monday, but he was out there on Tuesday watching practice, so that's a good sign. We'll see if he's back out on the field today when they take the field at 11 o'clock. My guess is he probably will be, especially with the off day. They might have wanted to just have been careful with him on Tuesday. And obviously with Conley missing time because of legal issues, that's, you never want to see a rookie miss time. It's never a good situation. But, you know, everything's been cleared now. So he was out on the field watching as well on Tuesday. So he's getting some mental reps at least. So hopefully he'll get back out there. But the veterans and stuff, you know, it's not too big of a worry. I mean, Irvin knows what to do. He's been out there for so long. And he knows he just has to eat up the side so Matt can get free too and get his own. But honestly, the biggest one has been Donald Penn missing time with his holdout because of a new contract. They've had to shift the whole offensive line, and you've seen Marshall Newhouse, who was expected to be the starting right tackle, have to move to the left tackle. And then Vidal Alexander and David Sharp have kind of been battling it out for the right tackle position.
Chris McClain joining us on KHDK from the Silver and Black Report. You mentioned Khalil Mack. Derek Carr, in kind of a fun way, sold him out yesterday. Mack had kept it to himself and his teammates, but apparently his goal is to get 30 sacks in a season. And Von Miller agrees 30 sacks is doable. The record, of course, Michael Strahan at 22.5. Interesting that Khalil Mack last year, if you look at his seasons, he had 4 as a rookie, 15 the year before last, and 11 last season. The Raiders, an NFL low, 25 sacks, and 3 between Stacey McGee and Dan Williams, those two combining for the other 3. How is Khalil looking this year, and do you think he's a guy that could legitimately shoot for Strahan's record?
He's one of those guys, just like Derek, obviously same draft, who has looked better every single year he's come into the offseason program. He's looked bigger every single year, just like Derek, too. And, you know, he's added to his repertoire. If you remember when he came out of Buffalo, he really just had a bull rush. And now he's added a spin move. He's added a solid swim move. He's added all these different moves to where he can beat the offensive linemen in a legitimate way. Last year, a lot of the times, he was beating his guys, but he was being held, and the refs weren't catching it. I know that sounds like a cop-out, but it's true if you watch the tape. And it just, you know, he had that streak where he had 8-9 sacks in a row in consecutive games, which is just absurd. I think that it is a legitimate thing. It can happen. Obviously, he'll need the rest of his defensive line to step up. You know, obviously, Irvin's going to command some help over there, but he needs his defensive tackles to come up in a big way, and they didn't really address the defensive tackle position in the way that a lot of fans wanted to see in the draft.
Well, I guess that kind of leads into the question I wanted to ask you. Obviously, there was a drop last year in his total number of sacks because of the year before, when all of a sudden the NFL's getting a look at what he is capable of doing. So last year, he drew a lot more attention. So what does he have to do personally in terms of what he can handle this year to combat those, you know, when they're sending multiple guys his way, as well as what does the team have to do to make him a little bit more productive and maybe even shoot for those 30 sacks?
Yeah, I mean, teams are going to adjust from year to year. We saw even with Amari Cooper as a wide receiver. But it's he just needs to keep working at it. They come and go. I mean, even with all the hard work he went through, he had all those sacks. And he's also such a big thing when it comes to stopping the run, which mm-hmm. is so underrated. A lot of people don't see it. But he is huge at getting tackles behind the line of scrimmage. And then also, you know, for being where he needs to be, he's a disciplined football player and follows his job. He, you know, they'll come. There'll be some games where he doesn't get any. Then there'll be another game where he gets five, like he had up against Brock Osweiler against the Broncos a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mario Edwards Jr., this kid coming out of Florida State was amazing. And he's had injuries that have limited him on and off throughout the years. Now, he's been on the sidelines working with trainers, but from everything I've read, he's looking pretty amazing. What are you seeing with Mario so far this camp?
Yeah, I mean, he's looked good from what we've been able to see, especially early in the off season. But he just needs to stay healthy. He's been great when he's been on the field. He's another good run stuffing D lineman who can get to the quarterback, and he's another key piece that, you know, they've been wanting to use kind of in the Justin Tuck role. Roll on third down to where they can kick him inside and then have Bruce and Khalil on the outside go out the quarterback and he can provide the inside rush. He just needs to stay on the field. And the same thing goes for Jihad Ward, who has mm-hmm. has shown flashes of solid play. But, you know, both of them just, you know, have got to stay on the field and limit their injuries.
What do you make of the Donald Penn holdout? I mean, you've had former Raiders, you know, Charles Woodson came out supporting his holdout. What is that situation, and how long do you think it's going to be before you think they're going to find a solution to it?
I think they will find a solution. It's interesting because this is the first holdout that Reggie has really had to deal with, so we don't really have a precedent set. But that said, you know, it was just last year, both sides waited until that last week before training camp to sign a deal and to get a deal done. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that might be playing into it at all. And also, he is 34 years old. He definitely is underpaid. He played above his contract for sure. But, you know, Reggie probably doesn't want to tack on too many more years, especially after he attacked the offensive line in the draft. And but, you know, I think what we'll end up seeing is he'll get a slight raise for this year and maybe another year tacked on. But I think it'll get solved. I know Reggie has always said that he'll pay the people that deserve to be paid, just like he paid Gabe Jackson, he paid Derek, and, you know, he's going to pay Khalil next year. And, you know, he got rid of Austin Howard, so he has a little bit of cap room to play with, and Lee Smith, the tight end, just restructured his contract as well. So he's making some room. I think he'll find a way to get it done.
Chris McClain of the Silver and Black Report talking Raiders with us right now. Hey, how is Marshawn Lynch looking? And I know he hasn't gotten a tremendous amount of time on the field, but when you just in general being at camp, the feeling, seeing him around the players, what if any impact has he had so far?
He's just got so much charisma, you know. He's out on the field talking to the young guys, coaching them up, and you get to see he lightens the mood. He brings a veteran presence to what is a fairly young team, which I think a lot of people forget is this team is fairly young. They got the core pieces, but they're all young, and it's just how the Packers did it when Reggie was there, and it's how he wanted to bring it here. But yeah, he's looked good, and he's looked good coming out of the backfield. We brought some oohs and ahs to the Raider Nation that was in the crowd the other day, made a nice cut right up the middle, and you know, just he's doing his thing. I'm not worried about him. I do wonder how many carries he'll end up getting. I think they're still going to involve the young guys quite a bit, but you know, He's brought an aura to the team that, you know, brought it to the next level, even though they were already such a confident group.
I think the interesting thing about Marshawn Lynch is when you factor in the the reality that the Raiders are going to be leaving Oakland. Now, it's going to be a couple years at least before that happens, but how much do you think that has added for the fan base in terms of, you know, those that maybe are a little upset about the decision to relocate the team, but then you have Marshawn Lynch. Do you think that has given the organization a little bit of a reprieve to a certain degree this season?
Oh, absolutely. I said it when the Vegas thing became official. If they get Marshawn Lynch, it's a huge boost in their ticket sales. I mean, obviously, there's fans that will forever be loyal, but then there's fans that are so diehard Oakland. If you're around this fan base, you understand that some are just will be a fan no matter what, but then some fell in love with them because they live in Oakland and they hate to see their city lose a team like the Raiders because they believe that the Raiders is very symbolic of their town. But I do think, you know, getting Marshawn, hometown hero, kid that grew up watching the Raiders, always wanted to play for the Raiders, Cal kid. I think, yeah, it's definitely a big reprieve for this organization.
One quick thing before we finish up on Khalil Mack, going back to him, Howie Long was talking about his potential. And he said he's like a six-story building, but the elevator's only on the third floor. You agree with that? I mean, based on what Howie said, Khalil Mack's reached about half his potential. If that's right, this is a scary dude.
I mean, I completely agree with it. He's getting better every year. He's adding moves every year. He's learning every year. Him and Derek are the first two players in that building and the last two players out. As cliche as that sounds to say, they just want to get their skills better and they want to win for the city of Oakland, especially before they head to Vegas.
I want to ask you real quick about Kelechi Osemele and Gabe Jackson. Do you think that duo right there is maybe the best guard duo in the league?
Yeah, I would say so. They're just so strong and angry individuals that I'm surprised we haven't seen a first fight out of either of those two. I have my money on either of those two to start the first fight in the camp. But yeah, I think I could run behind those two and get some yards in the NFL.
Chris, we appreciate your time. Always want to give you a plug before you go. Where can people see your work?
SilverandBlackReport.com or obviously SB Report on Twitter and at Chris McClain on Twitter.
We'll be talking to you throughout the season. We appreciate your time, Chris. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Have a good one.
That's Chris McClain talking a little Raiders. It's interesting. Camp's just chugging along right now. Keep crossing your fingers. Most everyone, you know, a couple of nicks here and there. Everyone's hitting it. Everyone's seemingly healthy for the most part. Get Donald Penn back in there. And tonight you've got the Hall of Fame game. The Hall of Fame game, always a highlight. Always one of those things that everybody.
That's so crazy. I never pay attention to that.
Oh, nobody.
The only reason it was even on my radar last season was because of the whole debacle with the field and how that all played out.
Well, everyone says, and I believe you when you say it, but everyone makes a big deal when it's the Hall of Fame game, and this is Cowboys and Cardinals. Everybody makes a big deal that, you know, it's not real football, I'm not watching. Then it ends up being like, you know, having ratings comparable to the World Series because people just watch it because it's football and it's on.
Well, and I think what it has in its favor is it's the first time you're really seeing football
exactly.
Since, you know, January. So
ESPN has just put out an article. You want to play with it with me. It's on projected win totals.
Oh,
in
that's
the
not
NBA.
The one I was looking at.
What were you looking at?
I was looking at the one where Howie Long and other former players were talking about Khalil Mack. That was a really interesting read.
Did you read the one about Darko Milicic?
Isn't he like a farmer now?
He's an apple farmer, and he's moving to cherries.
Wow.
He's moving to cherries. It's a hell of an article.
One of the biggest busts in the NBA.
And that's the thing. It's a hell of an article. The writer goes to Milicic's home in Serbia and visits with him for a few days and, you know, a party at his house here, his kids swimming in a lake and all that. And he's a religious dude. And the Serbian monks at his church, when they were asked, you know, hey, they were asked by the writer, how do you feel about Darko Milicic? And their answers varied from accomplished to a man that has reached his goals to a fortnight. What he remarked is that all the monks said about Darko Milicic, about what a success he was. And the writer is used to anytime you bring up Darko Milicic, you think bust.
Yeah.
And I think the point of the article is that it seems like Darko is at peace. He's still, you know, he's in his early 30s. He made over $50 million. he still has.
How did that happen?
Because he kept getting signed by Memphis or other teams that thought they could fix him. Orlando. Mm-hmm. Everyone thought they could fix him. He had so much talent, and he did. And so the article is he's got a beautiful wife. He's got beautiful kids. He's got a ton of friends. He lives in his hometown. He has a mansion out there. $50 million will last about 200 years, they said. And he farms apples. He's going to farm cherries, and he does nothing but roll around and have a blast. So the whole article was like, we know Darko is a bust, but in reality, Darko Milicic had a pretty damn good life and still has a pretty damn good life ahead of him. It's just interesting the perspectives you look at.
Yeah.
But they do have an article
farming.
Now. Mm-hmm. Farming. Why not? Apples. Didn't say what kind of apples.
I'm technically a small-time farmer.
With your little backyard garden?
Yeah. Which, by the way, just so you know, I made some homemade pasta sauce the other day.
Man,
phenomenal.
I was just, you know, it's so weird you say that. Because it was before the show, you know, when we're both doing our prep and stuff, I was thinking.
I didn't talk to you today, by the way.
I know, and I appreciate that. But I almost asked you because I was thinking, when is Katie going to make a pasta sauce? I've been thinking about that over the last couple weeks.
You're being an ass.
I'm like,
now.
Is Katie going to make a pasta sauce?
You're being an ass.
And there you go.
You're being an
ass.
You
made a pasta sauce.
You know what? Don't have garden envy, Dave. Don't have garden envy.
No, that's true. I do. My
Seriously.
Garden, my garden looks like it's Chernobyl's garden.
You know, you actually have to like water it and like do stuff with it.
I have automatic water.
Yeah, how's it working out? No.
My wife's thing is the garden, not mine. I helped her get the seeds. I seeded the garden. That's my job. She tends it.
Yeah.
Kind of like our family. It's kind of like how our kids are. I seeded them. She tends to them. But our tomatoes, ugh.
Not good. I've had great tomatoes this year.
So yeah, the fights are her fault.
Suck on those apples.
They are. Who in the Western Conference does ESPN project having the most wins, guys?
Are we talking?
Projected wins.
Wait, Western Conference, so you're talking basketball?
Yes. Of course. Golden State Warriors.
Denver Nuggets.
Who do they have number two?
Houston Rockets.
Houston
Rockets, projected win total 55.
Okay.
Who do they have three?
San Antonio.
San Antonio Spurs, 52.6 projected win total. Now we start having some fun. Who do they have fourth?
Oklahoma City.
Oklahoma City is fifth.
Crap.
At 49.5.
It's not.
Minnesota?
It can't be Portland.
The Minnesota Timberwolves, projected to be fourth in the Western
You're
Conference
kidding.
With 50.1 wins. Huh. Wiggins, Towns, and Butler.
Believe it when I see it.
The Thunder are fifth.
How many did they have last year? They have like 20, between 25 and 30.
I thought they were in the 30s.
There's no way that Jimmy Butler is a 30-win bump.
Oh, it's 30. They had 31 wins last year. One less than the Kings, as a matter of fact.
No way.
I don't think
he's that big of a bump for
I
them.
Don't think he's that big of a bump. I think that.
Who wrote this article?
I think this is Kevin Pelton, I think. Yeah, Kevin Pelton, who's an excellent writer.
Yeah.
Here's
excellent
the thing.
Writer doesn't mean he wasn't on something when he wrote it.
I think it's just adding in Jimmy Butler. Don't discount the fact that you're also getting a year older with Wiggins and with Karl Anthony Towns.
Hey, and Jeff Teague.
And Jeff Teague.
Don't you sell Jeff Teague short.
Well, you know, when I think of Minnesota's success, Jeff Teague doesn't pop right to mind, but he's a good piece.
He'll be a statue in a year.
Number six, the LA Clippers, 48.9.
No way.
48.9. Valuable replacements, Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams are part of an impressive return
for
Chris Paul.
This guy's smoking something.
Along with Jamal Crawford.
Crawford isn't in.
Along with trading Jamal Crawford, but they'll be depending on both Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari.
Yeah, if he doesn't punch someone else.
Depending on Blake Griffin.
At 47.2 wins, number seven in the Western Conference, according to ESPN's ranking.
Okay.
Portland is not it.
Denver?
47.2 wins projected for the Denver Nuggets, mm-hmm. according to ESPN.
And that's for sixth place?
That is for seventh.
Seventh, okay.
And the eighth seed projected by ESPN.
It's got to be Portland.
Portland is number 10, the Utah Jazz.
Or number
eight. At number eight, after losing Gordon Hayward, the Jazz have gone further towards emphasizing defense.
Right.
They traded for Ricky Rubio. They drafted promising perimeter defender Donovan Mitchell. They added defensive-minded reserves Thabo Sefolosha and Ekpe Udoh.
Mm-hmm. So much scoring.
Not really.
Sarcasm.
Just for fun. 44 wins these guys are projected at. Number nine. Who?
Are you talking about the Kings?
No.
Okay.
Oh, please don't say the Lakers.
Nope.
Oh, my God, the Pelicans.
The New Orleans Pelicans projected at 44.2 wins. See, he's on to something. It's exactly what I said. They're going to be improved next year. I'm telling you. You guys didn't believe.
But they missed the playoffs, yeah?
They do miss. According to him, they missed the playoffs.
DeMarcus Cousins is not going to be on that team at the deadline.
I can't say I would. Nobody knows for sure, but I would, bless you, I would probably bet on that as opposed to betting on the other. Portland Trail Blazers, 43.8 wins, number 10.
Wow.
The Mavericks, 11.
Wow.
The Grizzlies, 12th.
Oh. Well, that's crazy because they've made the playoffs, what, 6, 7, 8 years in a row now?
Yes.
Can I guess the final three of the order?
Let's see if you can guess them in order. Yes, go ahead.
Lakers, Phoenix, Kings.
Katie? Because those three teams in some order are the final three.
Mm-hmm.
Kings, Lakers, Phoenix.
Kings, Lakers, Phoenix. At number 13, with a projected win total of 33.
It's Lakers.
The Los Angeles Lakers.
Yep.
At number 14, with a projected win total of 30.3, with a hotshot rookie helping them get to that point.
Phoenix Suns.
Yep.
The Phoenix Suns. Dead last in the Western Conference. According to ESPN's projections, the Sacramento Kings with 27.4 wins.
Give me that number one pick.
Despite adding veterans Vince Carter, George Hill, and Zach Randolph as free agents, the Kings are projected as the league's second worst offensive attack by RPM methodology. Although this isn't part of the projection, few teams will have more incentive to improve their draft pick, as Sacramento won't have its first rounder in 2019. Obviously, that's the Philadelphia trade. We'll get to the Eastern Conference tomorrow. But remember, they have the Kings projected at 27.4 wins. There is one team in the NBA that ESPN has projected
Brooklyn?
As worse. The Brooklyn Nets are projected to have 29.5 wins.
Like cover the sport.
29, yeah, except you were wrong there. 29.5 wins for the Brooklyn Nets. That's kind of embarrassing for you because you were wrong there. 29.5, more than the Kings.
Oh, sorry.
It's either going to be Charlotte or Atlanta.
The Charlotte Hornets.
Because Atlanta got significantly worse.
Well, Matt, you're. I'll give you the good news and the bad news. I'll give you the bad news first. Charlotte is projected as the number 5 team in the East,
so
with 44.1
so
wins.
Way off.
So that's kind of that's more embarrassing for you than that was for Katie. However, the Atlanta Hawks projected wins 27.
Yeah, 5th place in the East is what, just as good as 9th place in the West?
My goodness.
So Atlanta was the last one?
Atlanta was the last one. From the 916, not one mention of Danny Crawford retiring. He screwed the Kings for years, and now he's out. What are you talking about? Danny Crawford screwing the Kings?
What's
Danny Crawford's
here?
One of the – you're mixing up refs, man. Danny Crawford's one of the best refs in the NBA. I wish there's about 10 other refs I wish that would retire before Danny Crawford. And yes, Danny Crawford announced his retirement yesterday. He is done refereeing. I like Danny Crawford. What you talking about? We'll talk to Ben Gumpert. I like him too, and I think so do you, Katie, right?
I do like Ben.
The Sacramento Republic, fresh back from Chicago and the MLS All-Star Game, and we'll tell you what Don Garber, the commissioner, said about expansion and Sacramento and what that means over the next few months. Back in a couple minutes. Sports 1140 KHDK.